You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Astail. All right, hello, and welcome to Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. I'm your host, Randy, and I'm joined today by my special guest co-host, once again, Georgia, my cousin. Thank you for joining me all the way from Toronto. And yeah, today we are going to be talking about The Dragon's Bride by Katie Robert. But before we get into the book, a little bit about the show. So this is Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. We are a book club that comes to you through the airwaves of CITR 101.9 FM every 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks we read a new book and we discuss that book on the air on this show. So you can reach us always at dogearedbookclubradio@gmail.com. That's our email. And you can also find us on Instagram at dogearedradiobookclub. So please check us out and contact us to let us know your thoughts on the books we read. But now let's get into this show. So Georgia, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
That's good.
Adjusting to the time change from Calgary.
Nice. Did you have a good flight back?
Medium.
Medium? Okay.
Made it through.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. I think that's what's most important. I feel like flying right now is never that fun. So, I mean, depending how fun you thought flying was before, but I feel like now it's just very stressful. So,
I know. I hate it. It's way worse than it used to be. I dread it. And I have to fly tomorrow, too.
So. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, you can't complain too much because you are going to New York to see NCT. Yep. So, you know, have some perspective, Georgia.
Living the dream.
But yeah, that's pretty exciting. I hope you're excited. But yeah, let's get into this book. Actually, I did. I don't have any book talk news once again because I have not been watching that much book talk right now. But I do have a complaint, and this is kind of related to the book that we are reading and talking about for this week. But I am getting really annoyed when authors release the first book in a series on Kindle Unlimited, and then they don't release the rest of the books in the series on Kindle Unlimited. So I have to buy them.
That's not good.
I think it's like, it's kind of like, I don't get the point. And like, it's not like the books. So like, okay, so this relates to this book. So this book is on Kindle Unlimited. That's how we read it. And the second book in this series came out today. And it's not on Kindle Unlimited.
Well, maybe it will be.
I know, but why not just have it out then on the day it's released? Why is there a delay then? So hopefully I'm just preemptively complaining about this. And it won't matter because it turns out that it's just going to be on Kindle Unlimited. And I'll be able to listen or reread it and I'll be happy. Because I don't want to pay $7 for it. Not that I don't want to support authors, but I feel like it's only 170 pages. That's so short for it to pay that much money for a book.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, I was on Twitter and I saw that the author had tweeted something.
The author of this book?
Like, I don't follow her. It just popped up on my timeline. I was like, that looks familiar, the name. I think it was, if you think writing a romance book is so easy, then why don't you try it?
Yeah.
So maybe I will try one.
I think we should. I think the conclusion of in a year from the show starting, which would be in July of 2023, I think we should commence writing the ultimate greatest romance novel ever written with zero grammar mistakes, because that's my thing. When I pay that much money for a book, why is there grammar mistakes in it? Like, what kind of editors? I don't know. But I do think a lot, especially the books that we're reading for the Monster Romance series or season, a lot of them are self-published. So I don't know what happens with editors when they're self-published. I'm kind of thinking that they don't play a ginormous role in the production of the book.
Well, maybe they get their cousins to edit it.
There you go. See, cousins are great. Cousins are great contributors. I wouldn't have this show without my cousins.
Yeah. In terms of co-writing a book, though, I think we'd get into quite a few fights.
Yeah.
It would end up being a book with three separate storylines. Three books in one. Or do a trilogy where we have to start off from where the other person left off.
Oh my goodness. Actually, yeah, we could do, I mean, there's series of books out there where, like, they're not really related and they're all written by different authors, but they're released as a series. So we could do something like that. But I don't know. I think Laura and I would butt heads a lot. Because I feel like we both like different tropes. And so, well, agreeing.
And I don't like tropes. So.
Okay, well, Georgia, you can't have a romance novel without tropes. That's the whole point of what a romance novel is. Oh, you'd find a way. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As much as I'd love to believe you, I don't. But maybe that's a fun project we will have. And then, you know, and then we could read and discuss our book on the show. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, it would definitely be a novella.
Yeah, a novella.
I would not make it a full book.
Yeah. You don't want to write a 400-page novel?
It would lose focus at the end. I don't know. I can't predict that it would be readable.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Honesty is the best policy, and I think that's what you're doing. Okay, well, let's get into the book. So we're going to start off doing our segment where we read the description, or what would be the back of the book, but obviously neither of us read the physical paperback copy of this book. So this is the description taken from both Katie Roberts' website and then also like the Kindle Unlimited version of this book. So the description of this book is as follows. Briere Rose might have a name out of a storybook, but she learned at a very young age that no prince was coming to save her. She'll have to save herself. Unfortunately, even that is an impossible task in her current situation, trapped in a terrifying marriage to a dangerous man. Desperate times call for desperate measure, which is how she finds herself making a deal with a demon, freedom from her husband in return for 7 years of service. She expects the service to be backbreaking and harsh. She doesn't expect to be put on an auction block in a room full of literal monsters and sold to the highest bidder, to Sol, a dragon. He might seem kinder than his fearsome looks imply, but she knows better than to trust the way he wants to take care of her, or how invested he is in her pleasure, in her experience. If something seems too good to be true, it certainly is. Falling for Sol is out of the question. She suffered enough, and she has no intention of staying in this realm, even if she leaves her heart behind when she returns to her normal life.
Wow.
So that's the description of the book. Georgia, I just have a question. Is that the book that you read?
In a way, I guess.
In a way.
But I'm thinking that there's some stuff in that description that didn't happen in the book.
Yeah.
Like, I don't recall her thinking about the service as being backbreaking at all.
No.
There's, I don't think that happens.
No, she literally, there's really no talk of what this so-called service is going to be until she's
other
like.
Other than the guy telling her what it is, and she never guesses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that strikes me as odd. Also, I was thinking that her name was Briar.
Briar. I don't know why I said Briar. It definitely is Briar. Okay.
I was thinking it's like my elementary school.
Yeah, Briar. Yeah, no, it definitely is Briar. I don't, because that's what happens. I haven't said it out loud until literally I go on the show and read it. And then the first time I read it, I'm like that little kid that like you, when you were a reader when you're a kid and you go to pronounce the words and you're like, I have no idea how to say things.
Yeah. Well, right when I first read her name, Briar Rose, I started laughing. It's such a romance book name.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it wasn't written by Briar Rose.
Oh my gosh, that could be our pen name.
Yeah.
But you pronounced his soul, right?
Soul. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how else.
Yeah.
Soul. I think soul.
Saul. No, but that'd be an A.
Azazel? Azazel?
Azazel.
Azazel. Azazel. Beautiful name. I'm not sure how
to do it. It's a name for a fearsome demon.
I'm assuming one of the later books is about him.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that later because I have thoughts about that. But yeah, I think for the most part, the description's accurate, but I think my issue with the description is it makes it seem like this is like a novel. And so like it makes it seem like this thing's like... There's, like, a plot and a story. There is no plot and story to this book. It's literally just smut. Like, I thought about that after. And I think the lesson to me is that I need to pick more plot-heavy books. Because I realized the two books that I picked for this are the most smut-heavy books that we read in this season. Which was not intentional. Like... I think it's truly just like they're not, they don't register for me.
Yeah.
And
no,
so
I
like
get that.
I'm just like, oh, that was an interesting book. Then I go back and read it and I'm like, wow, that was not that interesting actually.
Well, I think that happens a lot. I think when you read a book, like you really have to read it twice to really read the book.
Yeah.
And yeah, once you read it again and if your idea about it completely changes, you know that you maybe were in a different mindset when you first read it.
Yeah. And also, yeah, because when I was reading this book, I was very deep into the monster romance realm and I was reading like 10 of them a week. And so,
and it only takes a little thing to make it seem different, better because they're usually on the same level.
And like, I think I probably picked it because I thought it was, like, dramatic. But then I went back and read it, and I was like, wow, this is not actually dramatic. Like, literally, there's nothing happening. But we'll get into that. But, yeah, the description's fine. But, yeah, I think it just leads us to believe that it's, like, a novel. And truly, this is just a novella with, like, barely plot. Like, every single plot... conflict tension is immediately resolved
except for at the end.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we'll get into that later though.
Yeah, the ending. I'm gonna try, my goal is to keep these episodes somewhat structured. Of like,
yeah,
because I think it's so easy to just like go like bounce around and talk about a bunch of different things, which is fine, obviously we can do that. But yeah, let's do like quick general reactions. So what was your like overall reaction to this book?
I would say similar. I didn't feel like there was a plot. It felt like a book I've read before, kind of the same thing. Similar to the I Married a Minotaur for sure.
And oh my god, I forgot about that book.
And they fall in love with their monster right away.
Yeah.
Monster's perfect. But I think the ending made it stand out to me because it was such an odd conflict, such a serious conflict to bring up at the end and then resolve without fully resolving it. I thought that was so weird.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, are you completed your thoughts?
Yeah, it was sort of, I was reading the book, I was like, okay, I get yeah. basic smut monster auction thing. And then I got to the end and I was like, what is happening? Like, that's bad stuff. And then they're like, oh, it's resolved. It's over.
Yeah.
In a book. They yeah. love each other.
Yeah. No, like, it doesn't. Yeah. Those are my, yeah, I think my general reaction was very similar to that. I felt like this book was basically an underdeveloped novel. Like, I felt like it was set out to be written as, like, this full-length novel and have, like, a lot of plot development, tension development, character development. And then it was like, no, what if we just had more smut scenes in it? And then they took out half of the plot and made it only 180 pages. Yeah, I feel like the storyline, the characters, the plot was not conducive to what the book turned out to be, which was just like, yeah. So that was my general reaction. Yeah, I thought that it was kind of just like not. Yeah, it was just undeveloped. Like, it was a very underdeveloped book. The only thing I really liked was in the content, like, notes or whatever in the very beginning of the book, she, or the author, Robert, has, Katie Robert has, like, a bunch of tags and stuff like that for the book, and one of the tags that they have listed is, I only watch Once Upon a Time for the Scaly Lizard Man Beauty and the Beast retelling, and I just thought that was funny because it's, like, I don't know if it was inspired by or the sound came from it or they just, like, aren't related. But there was, like, the TikTok sound where it's, like, I only watch Once Upon a Time for the conventionally attractive blah, 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 whatever sound. Yeah. And then it's, like, it's supposed to be, like, the Hook character. But then it's, like, the Rumpelstiltskin character. And then people used it for, like, all of the shows where, like, you're supposed to fall for, like, the conventionally attractive person. But then everybody doesn't, like, everybody falls for a different character. Like, usually the villainous character or whatever. So I just thought that was kind of funny. Like, it was a very clever thing to put. But that wasn't even part of the book. That was just in the content notes. But I will give a content note right now. We are going to talk about domestic violence in this episode. It is mentioned as content in the novel in the past tense. So we might touch upon that in our discussion as we go into the characters and the plot of the book. But yeah. And then what about the characters? Let's go into the reactions to the characters. Briar, Rose, and Saul the Dragon.
Yeah, it's so funny how they have such big descriptions for these characters, big names, and yet they turn into just, like, very bland toast.
Yeah.
Very boring. I found them. I thought, well, if I wanted to get into the lizard part...
The lizard part.
I was so shocked. I was reading and not realizing that he had a lizard head until later on. I must have, like, read over some of the parts, and then I was like, lizard head. And I looked at the cover and I was like, oh, I was like, man, lizard face. But no, he's fully got a lizard head.
Yeah. No, this book tested my brain was just like fried after I read this book. But very quickly, I am going to read the description of Soul that Briar gives to us.
Good.
Because I think this will set the scene for what we're going to talk about. Okay, so this comes from the novel, obviously. So, quote, he's easily half a foot taller than Azazel. Azels? Did we decide how to say his name? Azazel. Which means I'll barely come up to his chest if, when, we stand next to each other. He's a strange mix of lizard and almost human. His head and face clearly leaning dragon. Okay, wait, pause. I like how in the same sentence, they're like, she's like, he's a strange mix of lizard and almost human. And then she's like, but he leans dragon. So which is it? Like, are you, I just,
he's
I don't.
He's a lizard with abs.
Yeah, he's a lizard dragon. I don't know. Okay. and face clearly Leonin Dragon, but his chest and arms looking more humanoid. Green scales cover the parts of his body I can see, ranging from a deep mossy color to one so pale it's nearly white. Two short horn-looking things spear back from his temples that look to be a good 6 inches long. He's terrifying and strangely majestic, and he looks like he could break me in half without even trying.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, I can't, like, okay. When we read I Married a Minotaur, I could still see the physical possible compatibility. This book had me stretching. I was trying to imagine, much to my demise, how things were going, and how, like, this character just doesn't make sense. Like, his description is just, but yeah, it's literally like a dragon with abs and pecs. I mean, if look at the cover, look at how big his pecs are. Like, he's just got ginormous pecs.
I think it really, these books really make you wonder, is it, are they just, do they just have abs? Is that it?
Yeah.
They're just a monster, but they're human because they have abs.
Yeah.
This is fully lizard-like.
But he has arms. Like, he has arms.
Lizards have arms.
Okay, but they don't have arms. Like,
like, I think it's okay,
but we need to clarify, is he a lizard or a dragon? Because they're not the same. So, okay, also.
Does he breathe fire?
Also, side note, yeah, I wish she breathed fire. That would make things real interesting. But this is kind of a side note, but it's also related to the book. Okay, but one thing that I really couldn't understand is, so he explains way back when there's, like, dragons, like the dragons that we know as humans that are as big as a house. As big as a house, they breathe fire, and somehow they bred with humans to create the humanoid version of these dragon-oids. I don't know what Sol would consider himself. But I just, once again, I appreciate the creativity, but please explain. I need some sort of backstory, some sort of understanding, just a little bit of an explanation if you're just going to throw at me the fact that somehow, like, you know when you look at a dog's, like, when they breed a dog and, like, one, and you, like, look at the two dogs that they bred and you're like, I wonder how that worked. That was my reaction. I don't get how this book makes any sense.
Or they could have just not included that and just had it be, well, this is what dragons look like. They're slightly humanoid.
Yeah. Like, they're dragon people.
Like, if she brought it up, or if they brought it up, you would expect it to, like, be, you know, resolved, kind of. And the character, Briar Rose, reads in the, and she's curious about this history that she's heard, just like you, and wants to read about it, but she never does.
Yeah.
So we, as the reader, never find out either.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, that's what Sol looks like. He's very scary. Most of the monsters, I don't think I'd run away from, but I would run away from Sol. I'd be out of there.
I also laughed out loud when I realized, when I read, that he was wearing clothes. I was not expecting that. A blousey shirt or something. Trousers.
Oh my gosh.
I was shocked. But yeah. Not shoes.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
No. And she just wears this. I was
not expecting that.
Yeah. And she just wears these dresses all the time. And they're so luxurious. They're satin. They're beautiful. Yeah. No. This book is wild.
I actually did appreciate, like, one of my problems with I Married a Minotaur was that she didn't allude to the Minotaur-ness at all. She didn't, like, describe how they got down to business. Versus in this book, there is one part where she explains how physically his mouth matches her.
Yeah.
Fits to her.
How his mouth works.
Like, thank you. Because, yeah, I was so confused. I mean, I didn't need it. It could have just been like, and I married a minotaur, forget about it. But I appreciate the effort to explain how this worked.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, she definitely does put in some effort to explain the why and how of, you know, why this is happening. But yeah, overall, it's also interesting because we don't really get, like, Sol doesn't really describe her that much.
She's red hair.
Yeah, she's just a woman. But once again, like, it's just wild. So, yeah, she's tiny, but she's very curvy. But not too curvy, because she's tiny.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, the same things that I think we've seen in literally every book we've read in this season. Or probably ever, to be honest. But, yeah, it's just, I think, okay, this is another side note, but I think reading romance novels so much lately has just made me want to ask every single man that I meet on the street what he thinks a curvy woman looks like.
Mm-mm.
Like, yeah. That's, I think truly I'm so fascinated now by what people think this term curvy is.
Well, I wonder what the author thinks or just throws the word in and expects us to fill it in with our brain because, yeah, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
What if he can just, like, snap her like a twig? I don't know how.
But he's a dragon. He could snap me like a twig. Like, I just...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But she's teeny tiny.
Yeah. But she can take it. Don't you worry. She can take it. Yeah, it's just wild. All right. Well, we're going to take a very quick ad break. And then once we come back, we'll dive more into, kind of, I think, more about the plot and probably more about the characters as well.
The Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival returns October 14 to 16 for 3 days of live performances, artwork, and workshops at the Roundhouse Community Arts and Recreation Center. CITR is thrilled to be a presenting partner and will be broadcasting live on location on October 14th from noon to 3 p.m. to kick things off. Admission is free and all are welcome. For complete festival details, head over to the Community Arts Council of Vancouver's website, www.cacv.ca.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey. Hi. Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again. Megamall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live on Friday, July 1st. Buy the cassette and lyric book on Bandcamp or stream wherever you listen to music. For the last 2.5 years, you could avoid everyone except yourself. Welcome to Lizard City. Oh, I see the love thickening over time.
Every Friday at noon, CITR takes you on a journey through Thunderbird Radioland. A journey of sound and song, of words and music, of the now and then, of the right here and the far away. It's the Eclectic Lunch, every Friday at 12 noon on Thunderbird Radio, 101.9 FM in beautiful Vancouver.
All right, welcome back to Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. I'm your host, Randy, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Georgia. And we are talking about The Dragon's Bride by Katie Robert, a monster romance. And a quick content warning, this episode may contain discussions of domestic violence. It is mentioned in the novel in the past tense, so we may discuss that in our discussions of the book. We left off, I think, chatting kind of more about the characters. We have gained an additional guest. My cousin's cat, Freddie, has joined us.
Yeah, it's his favorite topic also to talk about.
I'm glad. Who doesn't like talking about lizard humanoids? No, yeah, dragon humanoids, sorry. But yes, I think we left off just kind of talking about how it's nice that the author explains more about how the physicality compatibility works between these two characters, which we obviously won't get into because, you know, this is the radio. But if you're curious, just read the book. That's my best recommendation. But yeah, I do think that I think just having the head be like a snout. Honestly, in every aspect of this book, I just kept picturing an alligator head. Like, that's all I could picture. Yeah. And when I tell you that is this disturbing thing to picture during parts of this book, I'm not lying. I just, like, it made things a little difficult to be like, oh yeah, this is cute and romantic. Cause I'm just like, it's an alligator head.
Or it's gonna ruin Lyle Crocodile for you if you ever watched that movie.
Yeah. I don't think I can now. I think this book has made it so that it's never gonna happen.
Yeah, I'd say across the line in that way. I married a minotaur. Might have put a hoof over the line.
Yeah.
But this book really was too much. The head not being human is too much for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I need, like, a human-esque face. Because even, like, the I Married a Minotaur, truly, like, the biggest things were, like, the tusk, right? We were figuring out that. But, like, the face was still somewhat a human face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this lizard dragon, how does he kiss? Like, he doesn't have lips.
They don't.
Very weird. And she tries to explain that, which I appreciate. She just didn't acknowledge it, but wow.
Yeah,
still can't figure it out.
It's not like she's like, oh, it just works, don't worry, it just works. I think that's fair, and like I do give Katie some credit for that. But yeah, I do think it's like, yeah, what you said, like, they spend so much time trying to differentiate these characters, and then they just turn into the same archetypes of what these characters have been throughout all these other books, right? Like, she's supposed to be this defiant one, but then literally a week in, she's like, oh my god, I love you. Like, I can't believe you don't talk to me. which is, like, wild. Which brings me to the first point I want to discuss, which the thing I just cannot get behind in this book, is the timeline. This book literally takes place over a month. Like, I just...
Wild.
It's so fast. This book moves so fast. And I really hate that because, like, one of the subplots, or, like, it's not really a subplot, or, like, the characterization of Briar is that she just got out of an abusive marriage. So her husband was abusive towards her. She ran away, and that's why she made the deal with the demon that ended up, like, how she ended up in this situation is to escape this abusive husband. And so this idea that, like, they create this entire backstory to her of trauma, like, very, very deep trauma and distrust, but then somehow also in a month she just falls in love with a monster and is, like, A-OK to be married and get pregnant. Like, it's just, it's, I don't like that because I'm not going to, like, make a blanket statement about how anyone should behave with that type of trauma because I don't have experience with that. I don't know anyone with experience with that. And also, it's an individual experience. But I think what I am going to say is, like, this doesn't make sense. And I think it just, like, makes this type of issue way too light to give, like, because this book clearly is just meant to be a short novella that's, like, you know, a fun smut novella between a dragon guy and a woman. And that's fine. But you didn't, like, the idea that they gave her this entire backstory of all of this trauma and, like, yeah, just, like, kind of all of this, you know, struggles that she has, it just rubs me the wrong way then. Like, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I agree. Especially with the pretense of it. Like, I would assume, like, why bring up the 7-year contract thing if this was going to be resolved in a month? I mean, maybe it's for the later books, but
yeah,
still I was so confused why it's 7 years, like, over and over again. He even has to explain what the significance of 7 years is, and yet this whole plot takes place or ends within a month.
Yeah. And I just want to read another quote from the book. So this comes from chapter 20, and this is Briar speaking. Quote, 7 years felt like a small eternity, but as I reached the 1-month anniversary of my marriage to Sol, I can't shake the feeling that it's nowhere near enough. 7 years, only 84 months, 83 now. Like, it's just wild to me that we're supposed to believe that Briar shows up. You know, she came from this very, and, like, the other thing is, like, they do explain her having these reactions to Sol, to her environment, that are, like, trauma responses from her abusive marriage to her husband. Mm-hmm. But then she just magically gets over all of that. Like, it just, it doesn't make any, there's no character growth in this book, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, things are just resolved, and, like, she doesn't. So, I don't know. I think in my perspective, just don't give her that backstory. Like, if your goal was just to write a book that was just quick and easy, fun to read, you know, dark, spicy, do that. But don't give her this entire backstory of trauma and then be like, you know, she overcomes it. So that brings to me, like, the idea that, like, yeah, like, it's just the timeline of this book is unreal. Like, I wrote that several times in my notes. I would highlight things and be like, this is wild. I can't believe it's only been a week. But yeah, I feel like, so if you were to rewrite this book, then have it be, like, you know, an entire year. So maybe they live together in tension for an entire year, and then she gets fed up, and then she's like, well, you know, like, why don't you talk to me? I don't know. Like, just, they needed to draw things out. But the idea that it's, like, 1 week and she's fed up that, you know, he won't talk to her. And, you know, they make it this big deal. And then they fall in love during the next 2 weeks. And then they're ready to pop out kids a week later. Like, I just, it absolutely just, it made me mad. I think this book actually made me mad.
Especially, like, just add in a 1 year later or something.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that big of a deal to me to extend the time period, but still keep the book short.
Yeah. No, they could have done lots of time jumps. Like, I really don't think time jumps are that annoying. And it doesn't, like, I don't know. You could have had, like, you know, you could have had one scene where, like, as soon as, like, you know, they have to become married or whatever. And, you know, maybe, like, character-wise, it would make sense that, like, Briar would withdraw into her. Withdraw into herself. And kind of, like, spend a lot of time on her own. So maybe that, there's, like, a scene that explains that happening. And then you flash forward to a year later, and she's still in this, like, space, right, of being kind of, like, processing her grief, processing this relationship, you know, processing the loss, all of these things. And then, you know, and then you can have her start to grow this relationship with soul, and which eventually leads to, but yeah, it just like, and I agree with you. Why is it 7 years? Why is the deal for 7 years if they're going to just fall in love and stay together forever after a month? And yeah, it might be for later books. I kind of feel like, okay, this is my prediction. I was going to do this at the end, but I feel like it fits right now in the show. But so the books that they've like released so far, so this book is out, and then the second book, The Kraken Sacrifice, came out today. So that's like the Kraken. I think that's the guy that was in like the bathtub. He's like the water creature, the water monster.
Yeah.
And then the third one is The Gargoyle's Captive. I don't know when that comes out, but it's not out yet. And then The Demon's Bargain, it already came out, and I can't tell if it's the fourth or the sixth book in the series, but that's Ramanu's book, who is one of the bargaining demons. But yes, and then in this book, in The Dragon's Bride, they hint at Azazel's book. Azazel's book, about how, like, because he chose a woman from the auction, who like hates him, obviously. Why wouldn't you? And so there's like a scene in The Dragon's Bride where Briar's like, no wonder she doesn't want you. So I feel like that might be one where it's more drawn out, because this is the first book in the series, so maybe the timeline is shorter. But it's still, why then didn't they make it different timelines for each contract? Like, there's no reason why they couldn't have made each contract a different timeline. They didn't have to make the contracts all the same timeline, because they're different anyways. Like, Briar's contract was different because it had, you know, the clause about the baby, whereas the other ones didn't have that.
Yeah, totally. it was just to, I guess, create interest in the other books, but yeah, I really feel like they should have had different contracts. It didn't seem fair to me that she gets out of, like, the demon's supposed to protect her so much, but then throws her out of an abusive marriage into another marriage immediately. Like, that doesn't seem very protective of me, I wasn't getting it, really.
Yeah. No, it just, I think I'm just so stuck on the backstory. The fact that they gave her just this, like, massive traumatic backstory. And then it's not even, and, like, the thing is, like, I don't expect a lot from dark romance, okay? Like, I get part of dark romance is, like, giving characters traumatic backstories and, you know, like, different experiences in the past and, like, just in general darker themes, right? I get that all. But the issue I have it in this book is they don't explore it basically at all. They, other than hinting at like, oh, like she doesn't, I don't even remember. I don't even remember what things they attribute to her marriage. The fact that she doesn't want to be married again. and then I don't know. I think there's some scenes where she's like, she acts afraid or something. Or like she turns away from Sol. But yeah, the fact that they're just like, yeah, I can't get over the month thing. It's just so, I mean, the entire book is obviously unrealistic, but.
Well, yeah, I also think it's odd how, like, they do talk, she brings it up a lot, her former relationship.
Yeah.
And even, like, describes it, kind of, but it still doesn't feel finished. Like, she didn't describe it. She talked about it a lot, yet I still don't really know what happened.
Yeah,
it was weird. Honestly, I was confused reading it. Like, and to explain so much, or not explain, just cover so much of this traumatic backstory, but then not have any implications in the present, other than a few moments where she's unsure, but then is quickly reassured by Sol. It was odd.
Yeah.
Like,
it was very odd.
And I think that greatly would have benefited from an extended timeline, so that they could give her time to actually think through things and then come back and be like, okay, now I'm ready or something.
Yeah. And I don't think that has to take away from the spice of the book, which again, we've established is the point of this book, but I don't think that is to draw away from it, because truly doing that 1 year time jump would not be that difficult. Like,
yeah.
And it's not that hard for me to believe that she could find ways, like, maybe, okay, so maybe you have the part where she gets the translation spell. So then she just, you know, withdraws. And I keep saying that word so weird. I don't know why. But, and so she just goes to the library and maybe she just reads a lot. Like, right? Because that's one thing that she actually mentions is that she was never allowed to read in her old marriage. So maybe that's what she does. She loses herself in reading. And, you know, and then it's a time jump. And then, boom, they start having fun. Whatever. That doesn't matter. But, yeah, it's it would be so easy to just, you know, have a better timeline for the book versus a one-month timeline for all of these things to just come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, basically it would be, like, she's doing something and then she remembers her previous marriage, something reminds her of it, then she discusses that or like thinks about it, we read about it, about, oh, my husband did this, and then Soul's like, well, it's okay, it's me, and she's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And immediately problem is solved. You just explained this like deep trauma from your husband, like you literally just explained it. But then he's just like, oh, well, forget about that. And then she's fine.
Yeah.
I just feel like it happened multiple times where she would be like, give a good reason for her taking it slow. Yeah, they wouldn't take it slow. So odd. I did feel like overall, he did seem pushy to me. Even though he, once they get married, he says, well, this is, I'm going to be patient this time because it's for my wife. And I want to be patient for her. And yet there's no patience in the book.
Yeah, this man
pushes her a lot. And
yeah.
They immediately get together in a month. That's not patience.
Ugh. Yeah. No, it's somehow the story of Beauty and the Beast has more patience than this book does. Like there's okay, the timeline of Beauty and the Beast makes more sense than this book does, which is saying a lot because I don't think the timeline of Beauty and the Beast makes any sense either. Like No, this book is just but I do think this brings me to another point I want to talk about, the fact that I don't get what the tension or conflict of this book is supposed to be. Because, okay, so we have, like, the one that they lay out. Okay, well, obviously, she's put into this contract, binding contract. She's in this marriage to a, quote-unquote, dragon humanoid, whatever that is. Okay, but the number one that they point out all the time is that Soul needs a baby. That's why he entered into this agreement. He wants an heir to bring back the magic that humans bring to his land. Whatever that means, it's never explained to us, doesn't matter, we don't care. And she doesn't want to have a child with him because she has to leave at the end of the 7-year contract and she doesn't want to leave a child.
And she doesn't even know if she wants kids.
That too. Yes, that is also true.
She explicitly says that.
Yeah. Yeah, because again, they go back to talking about her marriage. Like, she, in her very, like, abusive marriage, harmful marriage, it was never, she said it was never an option. She was never, ever going to have kids with him. She knew that. So she went to, she took every single precaution and she went to a lot of work to never be able. So she never was able to explore the possibility of having family, having children. And then she's just thrown into this scenario, marrying this dragon guy that's like, yeah, I need to have kids, and that's why you're here. Like, it just...
Yeah.
It just...
did not seem like a good match to me.
No.
And that was the other thing. Like, in the I Married a Minotaur, there's a matchmaker who fits them together.
Yeah.
And this, there isn't. And I do not feel like they were matched appropriately.
Well, Azelza is the matchmaker.
Yeah, they could have had chemistry. But at the auction, the monsters pick them.
Yeah, the five but I people, feel like that's a setup somehow.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I feel like it's all fate.
I didn't really understand that plot thing. Why the auction happened?
It wasn't an auction.
Kind of lost.
It's not like they bid on them. They just picked them.
Yeah.
Like it was just like a selection process.
Yeah.
No, it made zero sense to me. Okay, but then the other tension that's really related to this, but like separate, is when she falls in love with Sol, then she's like, oh no, I have to leave in 7 years. That's not long enough. But it's never made clear why she can't stay. Like, I truly don't. Like,
yeah.
I get that that's not the contract, right? The contract is that she's there for 7 years and then she leaves. But why couldn't she stay? Like, there's no, they never give us a reason why she couldn't stay. And like, based on my very expansive history of reading monster romances that involve contracts with a demon, I've never encountered one where they're just like, oh, you can't change the contract. No, that's especially when there's love involved. Man, love conquers all. Like, it just, so I feel like that tension plot point once again made zero sense, because I was like, she could just stay. Like, she could just have the kid and stay and love Sol. Great. I solved the entire book. And so I felt like that was very, like, it was an underdeveloped tension and conflict of the book. And I felt like both of those conflicts, they just wanted, like, they were just wrote into the book. And I felt like the author was just like, believe me. And then just moved on. And I didn't just choose to believe them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And then getting to the end where she still isn't sure whether she wants to have kids, and she still is saying she doesn't want to. And so a birth control pendant is created, a magical birth control pendant is created for her to wear so that they can do it without getting pregnant. And
yeah.
During one of the times that they are doing stuff, he bites it and breaks it off of her.
Yeah.
And so therefore risking getting her pregnant,
yeah,
when she still hasn't said she wanted to, and she didn't agree to it. And to me, it was such a red flag that he would do that. And they were like explaining it as, well, he was like, you know, and he was into the passion so much, it got lost in it. And yet, he, like, lost control, basically, which I think is such a bad character match for someone just getting out of a relationship that was extremely abusive. Like,
yeah,
someone losing control and potentially hurting you.
Yeah.
I think that was so bad.
Yeah. Honestly, okay, this is another side note, but the more I, like, consider the books that we've read, like, a lot of these books, obviously, I think 18 and over, that's when you should read them. This book, I think you should be 25 years of age to read this book. I don't even think I should have read this book. Like, that's the point I'm at, because this book has such weird subliminal messaging that I don't know if the author thought these things through, because, yeah, it's just a weird characterization. And then I think what's more messed up, so that scene that you're talking about, she's like, well, I didn't say no. And,
yeah,
like, once again, we go back to our conversations about consent. Like, consent is an enthusiastic yes. It's not just saying no. Like, or not saying no, sorry. Yeah, so that's wild to me. And then it's so weird how the scene after that plays out, because he's like, oh, well, I'll get you another one and it'll help you. Like, right? Like, it's like, I guess it works as plan B too. I'm not really sure. I don't understand the magicness of this world. But he's like, you know, I can fix it. Like, it's okay. And then she's like, no, we need to talk about this. And then she's like, it's like she did a 180. And I think that's why I really don't like Briar. Like, she has zero character points. Like, her character makes no sense. She just flip-flops back and forth between every decision ever, and she doesn't stick to, like, any character point. Like, it just changes all the time.
Both characters, too, are hardly built-up characters that have thoughts and make decisions that make sense. I would say it's very much just whatever happens in the book they mold to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's whatever. Yeah. Honestly. Sorry, go ahead.
Just like these characters, like, I honestly couldn't think of stuff to say about them because they're so blah.
They are. Yeah. I think, honestly, this monster romance season has just truly, like, all these people that made fun of Ice Planet Barbarians, they're actually not that bad of books. Like,
yeah,
they at least have some plot. They at least have some tension. They got some action going on. Like, there's something happening. Whereas, like, I Married a Minotaur, Dragon's Bride, I don't know if these books have anything going for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you read it when you're really into monster romance, and then probably the best time to read it.
Yeah, you just, like, click on it, and then you're like, oh, this looks interesting. Let's give it a shot. Yeah, so the next thing is romantic parts. Can you think of a single romantic moment in this book?
No. No, I would say, and then so much of it is the opposite of romantic.
Yeah.
It makes me uncomfortable and not, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. I'll even say, like, as someone who likes dark romance novels, this book doesn't even fit that bill. Like, it's just, this book exists in its own category. I mean, I shouldn't say that, because there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of other books that are like it. But, yeah, like, it just, it doesn't, yeah, I feel like it's not contributing to any sort of thing that you want out of a book. Another thing that I thought was, like, props to the author for including this, and we did kind of talk about this when we talked about, like, explaining the physical compatibility between these two characters. They say that his claws can retract. Well, actually, they write in the book detract, which I looked at the definition for detract, and the definitions for detract and retract are very, like, two different definitions. And, like, because detract means, like, a person to, like, remove, basically, themselves, or, like, to, yeah, but it's, like, a person, I think, whereas, like, retract is, like, obviously you retract a knife, you know, retract a tape measure, like, to go back into itself is basically, right. Anyways, that's a side point that I don't understand. And if there's any English majors out there that are like, oh no, that's not what those words mean, then tell me that, because based on the internet, that's what they mean. And it made me mad that they used detract instead of retract.
It made it detracted from the book.
It did. It detracted from the book.
That makes it seem like his claws just fall off or something. Which in the other books I've read, they just bite them off.
What? I'm sorry, what?
I think it's in Cressley Cole books, they'll just bite their claws off so they can do it.
Oh, that seems worse.
Yeah, not very sanitary.
But then also, like, when you bite your nails, they're not that smooth. Yeah, so I did think that gave me, like, because it always concerned me in other books how that impacted the poor person on the receiving end. And so I like that they included this detail to be like, no, it's okay, because this is what happens. But yeah, that's, once again, I'm just reaching here to find things. But yeah, that brings us, we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about, I don't know what else we're going to talk about. I have a couple more points about this book that are things that I wouldn't use the term like, but I also didn't dislike them.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasque Mustail.
The Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival returns October 14 to 16 for 3 days of live performances, artwork, and workshops at the Roundhouse Community Arts and Recreation Center. CITR is thrilled to be a presenting partner and will be broadcasting live on location on October 14th from noon to 3 p.m. to kick things off. Admission is free and all are welcome. For complete festival details, head over to the Community Arts Council of Vancouver's website, www.cacv.ca.
All right, welcome back to Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. I'm your host, Randy, and today we are talking about The Dragon's Bride by Katie Robert, a book that I think myself and my co-host, Georgia, have determined that we very much do not like, and I mean, you can read this book if you like to, but I wouldn't advise it. Also, just a very quick content warning. This book discusses domestic violence in the past tense of one of the characters' lives. So that is a topic we will be touching on in our discussion of this book. So we left off talking about how we appreciated that the character, or the author, sorry, touched upon some basic things that we felt were lacking in other monster romances. So another thing I thought was interesting was the character Romanu, I think is their name. So this character is only referred to using they, them pronouns. But it's never really given any like explanation. They basically just like start using it, and then all the characters just use they, them pronouns when they're talking about Romanu. He is also a bargaining demon, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they explain that very well. I was lost as to who they were.
Yeah.
And why they were there. They're like a minion of Azazel, I think, is how I describe them, because they try to influence the relationship barely between. All they did was bring Briar into the same room as Soul.
Yeah.
Conniving.
Well, their book is out. You can read Ramanu's book. So I added it to my TBR on Kindle Unlimited. So maybe in the next episode, I will give a follow-up on that.
Yeah, I would appreciate it.
Yeah.
Be interested to know what kind of character development plot there is.
Yeah. But I think this just leads me to a discussion that I feel somewhat strongly about, is I don't understand why authors don't have more like non-binary, gender fluid characters in fantasy novels. Because this is my argument. I am going to talk about like a drawback, but my argument is like, if you're already creating this fantasy world, why must you stick to the gender binary so harshly? Like, it just, to me, it doesn't make sense. If you're creating this fantasy world where you're going to challenge all of these ideas of reality, right? You have magic, you have perfectly manicured lawns, you have beautiful forests, like all of these things, right? And you have delicious food that just appears. They never explain where the food comes from. Then why must you still stick to the gender binary so harshly and care about that so much? But I have heard critiques, and I do think this is valid, that like when we do only like create non-binary like demon characters or villainous characters, it works to villainize non-binary or gender fluid people. So I have heard that critique, but yeah, it's something that got me thinking, because this is truly one of the first like fantasy romance novels. I've read a lot of like high fantasy, or sorry, not high fantasy, that's not the right word, but like full length fantasy novels that do have like gender fluid non-binary characters. But as far as, like, monster romance books go, like fantasy romance, it's definitely not common at all, even for side characters. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's why it's definitely interesting that they have their own book now.
Yeah.
I assume it's a romance book.
Yes. Do you want me to read you the description?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be interested to hear.
Here we go. Lenora made a mistake. Okay, sorry. Context. I'm currently reading the description for The Demon's Bargain. So this is also confusing because this book is technically part of a Deal with a Demon series, which is the series that A Dragon's Bride begins. It's the first book in the series, but it's also written for this other ceiling or this other series, whatever, which is called Peculiar Taste Books, which is like a collection of a bunch of different books by different authors. So anyways, here we go. I will commence reading the description for this book. Lenora made a mistake. She trusted the wrong man, and in a moment of weakness, he stole a family heirloom from her. Her only chance to get it back will be during Samhain, when the shadow market opens and the magical folk gather for 3 days to celebrate, and unfortunately, she can't do it alone. She needs a demon. Romanu's entire existence is making bargains. They're a bargainer demon after all. They've had their eye on Lenora for some time now, so they're pleased when she summons them to help with her little thief problem, especially because it means spending time in close proximity with her. Lenora thought she could get away with a bargain that didn't require 7 years of service, but when Romanu informs her those are the terms, she decides to go it alone, even though the demon wants to tag along to the market. But as the clock ticks down and all Lenora's attempts to reclaim her amulet fail, making a deal with Romanu might be the only option she has, and they might take her heart right along with her soul. So, honestly, it seems like it has more of a plot. You know, you have this, like, thief plot where, like, she has to, you know, re-get this heirloom whatever thing. So that's a possibility. Wow, I should have just read this book for today. It's only 130 pages long. So it is interesting, and I'm really interested to read it. It just, like, begs the question of why must all fantasy have gender? I don't know. I think if I'm going to create this, like, magical fictional world, gender is, like, the last thing I would care about.
I know. Even just thinking about how strict they always follow it. Like, it's exactly, like I was thinking about this one book I read where they did add, like, some differences, like different cultures of different people in a fantastical world. Mm-hmm. Like, they have different beliefs and they think differently about things, and it did make me realize how, yeah, this makes sense in the book to have this, because this is a different world that they live in. They'd have different world views and therefore different gender expression, different roles, all sorts of things. And it's really nice when an author includes that, because you can tell that the world is truly built up in its own way rather than just sort of a magical earth world.
Yeah, it's, and, like, definitely, like, obviously none of these worlds, because fantasy is written within our patriarchal, colonial, capitalist world, it's not going to be completely, you know, separate from those things. And I'm not saying that you should do that, but I think it's interesting that, like, there doesn't seem to be a ton of motivation by a lot of authors to try to get away from it, to really, really try to get away from it. I don't know. It strikes me as interesting. So I just thought it was interesting in this, like, very, very short book that, like, clearly was just written to be spicy romance between, once again, a dragon humanoid and a human woman, they chose to, like, choose a character. And then also that they now have their own book. Or it's a novella. Mm-hmm. It's not a novel. But yeah, I think that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I might consider this book a novella too, if so short.
Yeah, that's true. I think they both are.
I do really feel like the ending of this book is so rushed.
Yeah.
Like, so, after the conflict of them, of Soul biting off the chain.
Yeah.
They're arguing, or not really arguing, I don't know. And Azazel returns and overhears what he did, and he's horrified. And yeah, honestly, rightfully so.
Yeah.
It is breaking the terms of the contract, and yeah, pretty weird and messed up. And so he takes Briar away from Soul. And she's angry at him, but I don't know. I feel like Azazel did the right thing. And I think that Soul needed to do more explaining. And yeah, it's wrapped up pretty fast, and they're only separated for 3 days.
Yeah, 3 whole days. yeah, and I think that's my biggest thing, is the fact that, like, Briar doesn't have a larger reaction to that. Just, I think it gets disingenuous to her character. Because, like, mm-hmm, she should have a reaction to that. Like, it makes sense that she has a reaction and, like, needs to talk about it and needs to work through it. So the fact that they're just like, nah, she's fine, she doesn't care, you know, because she didn't say no, is just so messed up in the plot of this novel. It just doesn't, I don't like it.
I also feel like the way this was done, it made Azazel seem like a much better character than Soul. Like, he was more interesting. Honestly, I'd say he had more chemistry with Briar.
He has more chemistry with everyone.
She's hardly a character. So, kind of disappointed in that.
Yeah.
The side character is just being way better than the main character. That's a problem.
Yeah. Well, that was the exact problem with, oh my gosh, what book did we read?
I Married a Minotaur.
Yeah, where she has better chemistry with the side character than the main guy. Yeah, not a good thing. Romance authors, please just write better chemistry between your main characters that we're supposed to believe fall madly in love with one another.
Yeah, I think that is so important. Like, why is it that it's so easy to write a side character with personality but not your main character?
Yeah.
It's so odd. I think what she could have done to give Soul some character, like, it's so odd too, because it's from his perspective, like, it flips perspectives, and yet he doesn't have personality at all. Like, they could have used tropes or something, I don't know. Instead, he's not even a character. They could have made all the male characters maybe the same, like, Azazel would be the same personality as Soul.
Yeah.
Maybe that way he would have had a personality, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm reading another Katie Robert book. It's called Queen of the Vampire. Nope, it's called Throne of the Vampire Queen. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know. Anyways, I won't get into it because this is, again, this book is. It's too spicy for the show, so we will not be able to discuss it on the show. But I want to talk about the actual point of the book, which she's basically this, like, vampire something. I can't remember what the other part of it is, but basically she's a monster that, like, forms bonds, like, can form a bond with a vampire, and then she has control of them. So she bonds with these three, they call them bloodline vampires, which basically means they're, like three of the seven original vampires. Mm. So they're very powerful, and, like, they each have a power So one is a shapeshifter. The other one has a fire power. I don't know. He just lights things on fire. I don't know. And then the other guy, I forget what his power is. Oh, it's blood. His power is blood. So he can control people's blood. Yeah. So anyways, but I just... So the concept is like, yeah, she's like quite powerful and she has this bond so she can control them. And like the whole, like, I'm only halfway through, but she's like, oh, this is so bad. Like, I don't want to control you. It's so bad that I have. And I'm like, no, this is so cool. Like, I want someone to rewrite this kind of book, but where she's evil. Like, I want to read a book where a woman can control like three of the most powerful male vampires. That's epic. Like, that's so awesome. I love that. Like, the power. Oh, that's awesome. But I don't know where I was going with this. Oh, but I was going with, like, but it's interesting because in this book, they have each, like, all four of them basically have, like, a certain characteristic. So, like, the one guy is super serious. The other guy is, like, the funny, like, haha, I'm a jokester. I'm the class clown of the group. And then another guy is like, I don't know, maybe he's like the cool playboy type, I guess. Or like, I don't know, the caring guy. I'm not really sure. His characterization is kind of everything. And then she sort of has a characterization that like she's pretty strong. But she's also, once again, she's whiny. They need to stop making a lot of these women characters whiny. But yeah, my point is just that, like, it's possible. I've read books by this author before where, like, the characterizations are super good. The character development, the plot development is really interesting. Like, I think I've told a few people about this, but Katie Robert wrote a series of books called the Wicked Villain series. And it's basically reimagining, like, Disney villains, but they're human. And they all live in this different world where they have a territory. Anyways, and they're somewhat interesting. Like, they have interesting characterizations. So, yeah, I just think overall this book just, I don't know where it was going. I feel like it honestly wasn't needed. I feel like they could have just started with the other characters.
Again, like, if you give these characters such wild appearances, give them a wild personality to go along with it or something. Why does this matter that he's a lizard drake, and why does any of this matter?
Yeah, and I just, and it's interesting because I was reading the description for, like, the next two books in the series, and one of them sounds so interesting. I'm gonna see if I can pull it up. I don't know if I can, though, because I don't know if it's on Kindle Unlimited yet, and I don't have the effort to go to, her, like, Katie's website to find it. But I just think that, like, hold on, I'm gonna see if I can find it. Yeah, here we go. Okay, so this one sounds interesting. So this is the Gargoyles Captive. So this is the third book. It says it comes out in the end of March 2023. But the description for it is, Grace is a monster hunter who went into her demon deal with eyes wide open. Years ago, her mother made the same choice and was never seen again. And the answers Grace seeks can only be found in the demon realm. She doesn't care that she's auctioned off to a gargoyle. She doesn't plan to stay with him longer than strictly necessary. Unfortunately, she didn't read the small print of her contract. Every time she tries to escape, she's transported back into Bram's tender care. He never hurts her, never punishes her, just meets her fury with an easy charm she doesn't know how to fight. She doesn't mean to give in, to stop fighting, but the moment she does, she starts to forget that what brought her to this place and what her goals are. From a life starved of pleasure, she's all willing to let Bram seduce her. So I feel like that one even seems a bit more interesting, where, like, you know, she has this, like, different goal, and then, like, depending on the timeline, I am concerned that it's going to be like 1 month. Like, she's going to try to like search for secrets about her mom for 5 days, and then she's going to be like, oh, I give up.
Yeah. I worry about that. And the male, he kind of sounds boring again.
Yeah.
Tender care. Give him some fire, something.
But I think that could be an interesting, like, the whole grumpy sunshine, right? If she's like hard headed, very like, you know, and like he's easygoing, that could create an interesting dynamic. Whereas I felt like there was zero dynamic created between Briar and Sol.
Yeah.
It just, there wasn't a lot going on. I don't know if I have much else for like notes I took. I felt like my main things were just the timeline of this book and then like the whole characterization of her past in her marriage and like why that doesn't really go with the timeline of the book.
Yeah, I agree. I would say it's the ending kind of ruined it for me.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he crossed a lot of lines and yet they still end up together after not much resolution.
Yeah.
And I would also say the same thing about the abusive ex in her past that is not fully fleshed out and made an important character point that has to be resolved or grow. They have to grow together. I would have appreciated that. I don't know who I would recommend this book to. Someone who's just, you know, going through a bunch of monster romance and wants something else. Or someone who wants to hear about a lizard head man.
And how that works.
Yeah,
I would say, like, if you're like I was this summer, where I was basically, I went through a monster romance phase and that's all I was reading, and you have a Kindle Unlimited subscription by chance, just read this book. Just add it to your reading list on Kindle Unlimited. You'll go through it in legitimately like 2 to 3 hours. It's it's so quick. I mean, I don't know. And then you can formulate your own thoughts outside of our critiques. Yeah. I mean, I know we spoiled the entire book, but I still think, I don't know. Someone will find it interesting. But I think there is some larger issues with it, which honestly are not unique to this book, exist in a lot of romance novels. So I'm not going to put all of the blame onto this one author. That doesn't seem fair at all. But yeah, is there any final thoughts that you want to give before we wrap up this episode? We're going to end a bit early because this book is a bit shorter, so.
Yeah, my final thoughts would just be on characters. I think, like, really have characters.
Yeah.
You know, people who stand on their own. You can think of, like in The Sims, when you pick characteristics for your Sim. Like, something like that. I just wish there was, like, something that stood up out about Briar other than her past. And I wish there was something that stood out about Sol other than his lizard head. And I wish they did grow together more.
Yeah.
And resolve issues in a more healthy way. And then this would be an interesting book, I guess.
Yeah. Honestly, sorry, go ahead.
Like, smut doesn't have to be just smut. And smut is better if the characters are characters rather than just blank slates. So I wish there was more. I think it would have made the smut better.
Yeah. I mean, you're 1,000% right. Like, yeah, you have good characters. Good characters, good character development will never take away from the novel.
Yeah.
Or from the book. It just won't. That's not, it's not at all possible.
Well, these are just notes for our book.
Yes. Man, this is getting harder and harder. I don't know if I've never had to write character development before.
Exactly. We can talk the talk. We have to be able to walk the walk.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's get cracking. Let's write this novel. Maybe we should think of a title first. No, just kidding. Yeah. Yeah. Or some sort of... Yeah. Wow. I know it's difficult. And that's why, like, at the end of the day, I applaud every... Well, okay, that's a lie. I don't applaud every author. There are some truly awful human beings that are authors out there. So I do not applaud you. But other authors... that are following their passions, that aren't actively causing harm, I applaud you because yeah. I don't want to write a book. I want to read them. So thank you for writing books so I can read them and talk about them. But yeah, I think that brings us to the end of this episode of Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. So we will be back in 2 weeks on Tuesday at 6 p.m. And we will be talking about, I don't even know what we're talking about. Georgia, do you know what book we're talking about next?
It was Laura's book.
Yeah, it's Laura's pick.
It is a YA book.
Yeah.
It ends with Y, I
think. it's called The Curse Girl by Kate Avery Ellison.
I'm excited to read it.
Yeah? I hope it's good.
It's different.
It's different
than our other ones. It's not smutty. It's like
fantasy.
So that'll be an interesting change.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good change. It'll give us more to talk about. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode. As always, you can follow us on Instagram at Dog Eared Radio Book Club. And then you can also email us at dogeareredbookclubradio@gmail.com. And yeah, please read the book and tune in 2 weeks to hear a discussion about it. But yeah, I will leave you to the rest of your Tuesday night. And thank you once again, Georgia, for joining me today.